Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, we'd like to welcome everyone to Africa on the Move, a show that's dedicated to the upliftment of Africa, African people, and as well as to all the oppressed communities. Tonight, we're going to be speaking on a topic which is, we believe, is very important, not only to African communities, but to oppressed people in general. And that topic tonight is, we're going to be talking about Venezuela and the Bolivarian Revolution. And with us to discuss the topic, we have with us Brother Bamboshi Shango. He's a political organizer. And he have had experiences of going and traveling and working with various communities throughout the African diaspora. Right now, we'd like to welcome Brother Bamboshi to Africa on the Move. Welcome to Africa, Brother Bamboshi.
I'm doing good, brother. How are you? And hope your station and your audience is doing fine.
Oh, we thank you. Brother Bamboshi, before we get started, just give a brief introduction of your political background and the type of political work that you've been doing for several for years, for the last 10 to 20 years of your lifespan.
Well, that's something that, well, I put it this way. I'm basically an organizer. I've worked in organizing both nationally and internationally as well as locally. And I've been organizing for revolution. I've worked with the All African People's Revolutionary Party since 1972 and it's founded.
Okay, as well as I understand, you're with a group called the National Network on Cuba. What is that organization about?
The National Network on Cuba is an umbrella of different organizations inside the U.S. who are doing solidarity work with Cuba, in support of Cuba, and the need for Cuba to have the rights to be its own sovereign country, which it is, independent of any other country, and without any other country trying to dictate its policies, its procedures, how it should govern its people.
Excellent, excellent.
And Cuba's been doing that since 1958.
Brother Shango, if you can just give our people a general idea, since our topic tonight is on Venezuela and the recent election, before we really talk about the recent election, often when we look at Venezuela and read articles on it, they keep using this concept of Bolivarian Revolution. Can you give our people a general idea? What do they mean by that?
Sure. The Bolivarian Revolution is the revolution that has taken place since 1998-99. It's a revolution that was brought into being by President Hugo Chavez Ferris, the previous president of Venezuela. It's the revolution which continues today under Nicolas Maduro, who is the current president of Venezuela, who won the election by a larger majority than the Bush did in 2000. In Florida, and there's a controversy brewing because, one, the right-wing opposition, Enrique Capriles, has refused to recognize that he has lost, and, two, he has the backing of the United States and President Obama, who has refused to recognize also that Nicolas Maduro has won the election. So the Bolivarian Revolution is a revolution about taking Venezuela's vast oil wealth and using it to benefit the masses of the people in Venezuela, especially the poor people in Venezuela who has never benefited from the oil in Venezuela. So through that revolution, there's been a number of developments, a number of missions, most of it built around social improvements, the improvement of health, the improvement of education, the improvement of living standards, the improvement of wealth equality. And that revolution has been come to be called the Bolivarian Revolution because Simon Bolivar, who has been known as one of the early liberators in South America, envisioned a union made up of the countries, especially countries in northern South America, equal to the union that exists in the United States in the early and mid-1800s. And this revolution that has taken place since 2000 is a revolution that has used the vision of Simon Bolivar to begin to benefit the people of South America. And you can see the benefits of this revolution spreading out from Venezuela to Bolivia to Ecuador to different places, not even just in South America, but also in Central America and the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And so, as you begin to look at this, some people in the United States see it as the U.S. losing ground. It sees Central America and South America as a playing field owned by the United States. And that as the people begin to become independent of the United States, they see this as the people, as America losing ground in these areas, and thus the need for a rollback of these revolutions. And because of this, you now have the standoff that you have, especially in terms of what's taking place in Venezuela. But you've also seen it in Honduras, where a right-wing coup d'etat was pulled by the military in Honduras in 2010. It was led by people who graduated from the U.S. School of the Americas, which has been renamed WINSEC. Mm-hmm. And the School of the Americas in the U.S. is the military training ground down in Fort Benning, Georgia, that has trained most of the death squads that have existed in South and Central America over the past 50 years. So,
okay,
the Bolivarian Revolution is against this.
Okay, in terms of looking at the Bolivarian Revolution that's taking place in Venezuela, let me just ask you in terms of, can you give us some of the demographics of the makeup of the people? And more in particular, what role does the Afro-Venezuelans play as it relates to the Venezuela Revolution?
Well, before this revolution, before the coming to power of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, the Afro-Venezuelans played a very minor role in the political and economic stakes of Venezuela. Since the coming to power of Hugo Chavez, who he himself says that he is Indian and African, and that as an African he is a Mandingo, the Afro-Venezuelan situation has changed dramatically. It has changed to the point that now the Afro-Venezuelan is playing a fundamental role in the politics of Venezuela. And, you know, you must admit the Afro-Venezuelans was the bottom of the ladder in the Venezuelan society. And so anybody who comes and lift up the Afro-Venezuelans lift up the entire Venezuelan society. When the Afro-Venezuelans benefit, the entire society benefits even more. So today you have Afro-Venezuelans who are ambassadors, who are heads of political departments, advisors to presidents, etc. This you didn't have before. You never had this before, Hugo Chavez.
Okay, yeah. Seems like to me that from what I've seen so far, that within the context of the Venezuelan Revolution, they realized that their particular revolution could not be isolated from the rest of the oppressed communities throughout the Latin and Caribbean America region. As well as, I think they have also been reaching out to African countries. At this point in time, I would like for you, if you could articulate just a little bit to our audience, what have the Venezuela done for the U.S. and for the Americas, North, Central, South, and the Caribbean? What role have they played in terms of these countries' affairs and the people's struggles?
Okay, let me just say that Venezuela is the number one supplier of oil to the United States. And Venezuelan oil used to not be owned by the Venezuelan, even though the Venezuelans nationalized their oil back in the 1980s, long before Hugo Chavez came to power. But even though the oil was nationalized, it was still owned and controlled by the major U.S. oil companies. So today, Venezuelan oil is actually owned and controlled by Venezuela and the Venezuelans. And as such, it is still today one of the major suppliers of oil to the United States. This is a situation where, you know, the American oil companies are not very happy. They're not very happy with Venezuela because of this. But even with that situation, the Venezuela oil company Citgo has came to the United States. They have given free heat and oil to communities in Boston and New York and Chicago and Minneapolis and throughout the U.S. There's different pockets of communities who have poor people who would probably have frozen over these winters that have been created by global warming, which, again, you know, people are sticking their head in the ground and refusing to exist, accept that it exists. But these communities that have been affected by global warming have poor people who most of them would have frozen had it not been for the Citgo oil project that has given free oil to these communities. There's also Operation Miracle, which is an operation, a medical operation, that they're organizing and are given free to people throughout South and Central America and the Caribbean. It's an operation that if you go to a doctor by yourself, it would cost you millions of dollars, and most of the people in South and Central America could not afford to have it. It's an operation that removes cataracts from your eyes. So you develop cataract and you slowly go blind, but it's a process that can be reversed. So they have these laser machines that can remove the cataracts, and they have been doing it for people throughout South and Central America for free for the past 10 years. And so this process has been offered to the United States, and one of the first persons to have this operation in the United States was a black woman who was a bus driver from Chicago who could not afford this operation and could not afford to continue driving while she was going blind, and that was her only source of income. So they did that operation on her, and they've been trying to implement that in the U.S., but it has been blocked on a number of different grounds. It is an offer that still exists. They have been given energy-saving light bulbs, free of cost. These bulbs in your hardware store usually cost you around $8 or $9 a piece, and they've been giving them free to most of the communities who also get free oil. So it's more of an all-inclusive energy-saving package that they're given. They've been in the United States access to free culture from Venezuela and throughout South and Central America. They've sponsored cultural artists, brought them to the U.S. and have them on tour. Of course, probably one of the most memorable is the Venezuelan Youth Orchestra, which toured the United States with almost 400 kids. They were one of the best youth orchestras in the world. So they have been doing those kinds of things. Outside of the United States, they have different programs like ALBA, which is the Bolivarian Alternative for our Americas. In ALBA, there's a program called Petrocaribe, which has been selling gas to the Caribbean at a reasonable price and without the markup of interest that the Caribbean would normally have to pay for from American oil companies. And thus, the Caribbean have been able to use their income towards other sectors of their community without worrying about just paying interest on their gas bills.
Mm-hmm.
They have given health and educational processes to most of the islands in the Caribbean and also to South and Central America. During the earthquake in Haiti, one of the countries that actually brought in money, food, and tents was Venezuela. And Venezuela, unlike the U.S., did not send the military into Haiti after the earthquake, but instead sent in the doctors to assist the Cuban doctors who were already there. And they sent in, most of the tents you see there came from Venezuela.
Let me just stop you right. Go ahead. Finish your point, Brother Shungo.
I'm sorry. I was just saying, so you can see they've been working.
Yeah, let me ask you this other question that is very important to what is going on right now in Venezuela. And we also would like to alert our callers and our listeners that they are there. The line is now available where you can feel free to call in to give your views and comment on the subject tonight. We're talking about Venezuela and the recent elections and the Bolivarian Revolution. You can feel free to call in at 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. Our line is open. We'd like to get your views and comments as we continue to discuss this particular subject topic with Brother Bamboshi Shungo, who is a political organizer for the All African People Revolutionary Party, GC, as well as a co-coordinator of the National Network on Cuba. While we wait for our callers, I think we do have one caller on the line right now. We're going to hold up for 1 second, but Brother Shungo, can you talk a little bit right now about what has taken place since the recent election? What is going on? Because I read an article earlier where I understood that there seems to be people coming in from the U.S. trying to destabilize the country of Venezuela. They captured one America, or at least some documents showing where this was a plan that America has in place to try to undermine the ongoing processes of the recent election that has taken place. Can you speak a little bit to that And after that, we'll take our first caller.
Okay, let me begin by doing it this way. In the United States, there's two agencies that are responsible for manipulating elections and democracy around the world. One is called USAID. The USAID goes around financing whoever they feel should be in power in different countries, irregardless of what the people of those countries feel, irregardless of who the people of those countries want to elect. And thus they, by doing that, are able to continue a program that they themselves call regime change. There's countries where, because the political leadership are people that the U.S. feels will not uphold the U.S. interests, but instead uphold the interests of the masses of their people, they feel that those leaders need to be removed and replaced with leaders who are more palatable to the United States. And so they have regime change as a problem. The other agency is called NED, National Endowment for Democracy. And the National Endowment for Democracy is an organization in the U.S. that says that it is a non-governmental organization, that it is a private organization, yet it receives 97% to 98% of its funding from the United States government. NED is made up of four components: National Democratic Institute, the National Republican Institute, the AFL-CIO Solidarity Center, and the U.S. Bureau of Anyway, there's these four components of NED. And if you go on the internet and Google NED, you will see a lot of documentation on them. And it will show you where NED basically goes around the world interfering in the political processes of different countries by financing the opposition or those governments that the U.S. feel is more friendly to the U.S. per se, or less friendly to their own people. And so you have these two organizations that's basically been at work in Venezuela. Ever since Hugo Chavez came in, they've tried everything to overthrow him. They pulled a coup in 2002, and they pulled that coup, and Bush immediately recognized the coup government, which in all reality only lasted 24 hours, because 24 hours later, Hugo Chavez was back in power. The people went and got him. They put him back in power, and he's been in power until he died. But he came back to power. It never stopped them from attempting other coup-like items that they've done. So what is going on right now is the U.S. saw the death of Hugo Chavez as a new period when they could again try to pull a coup in Venezuela. They took this man, Caprilli, who is extreme right-wing in Venezuela. As a matter of fact, I'll show you how right-wing he is. During the coup d'etat in 2002, when they pulled a coup against Hugo Chavez, Caprilli, who was then the mayor of Caracas, stormed the Cuban embassy, surrounded it with people, and seized it for almost 2 days. Wouldn't let anybody in, wouldn't let food in, wouldn't let people out. And his pretense for that was that He thought the vice president of the country was hiding in the Cuban embassy. And after that incident, in 2005, 2006, he was tried and sent to jail for doing that. And he did about a year and a half in jail. And some of the judges in the Supreme Court let him out in 2007 or 2008. And again, the U.S. took him to start grooming him to be the president. And while they were pretty sure that their investment would work this time, they still lost the elections. They lost it by 1.8% of the vote. It was a very close election, but it was less close than the elections that replaced the presidential elections inside the United States in 2000. And so what has been going on after that is that the opposition has called its people to take to the streets. And I don't know if you know the history of Venezuela, but this was the same thing they did just days before the coup d'etat in 2002. They called for their people to take to the streets. They had people hiding on rooftops, shooting the folks in the streets, shooting folks on both sides. This time they've only shot members of the party of Hugo Chavez and the United Socialist Party of Venezuela. So far, 9 people have been killed, and they've all been members of the United Socialist Party of Venezuela. But in 2002, they've killed people who were also with the right-wing opposition. And then using that, the television stations in Venezuela, which is not government-controlled, are also in opposition to Hugo Chavez, claim that he was killing Venezuelans and that he couldn't govern, and that was the rationale for the coup. Today, you have a similar situation. You have the same group of folks trying to create a condition that would make it easier to have a coup, and you also have the United States again interfering in Venezuela's internal affairs by saying they don't recognize the elections. Well, you know, the U.S. don't recognize the elections wouldn't really mean too much of anything, except it has emboldened the right wing, and it has allowed the mercenaries that the U.S. has sent into Venezuela to also take to the streets and help lead these demonstrations and create these murders and things like that. I mean, you know, when you look at what has happened, how many people, if they were true Venezuelans patriots, would burn down health clinics? And how many true Venezuelan patriots would first burn down health clinics before burning down anything else?
Okay, brother.
You know, yes, sir.
Brother Sugar, let me stop right here because we do have this caller been waiting for a while. A couple callers have been waiting. We're going to stop right now,
sure.
And we're going to allow our audience to call in. And if we're going to extend this show over for some additional time. So if you don't get to hear the whole program, you can always go to our archive and view the remainder of the show. But let's take this caller. Our caller is number 488. Caller 8488. Welcome to Africa on Your Move. Your question or comment, please.
Peace. Yes, what? Peace. This is Mikhail from Philadelphia. How you guys doing? Very interesting program.
How you doing, brother?
Very good, very good. Got a question. We recently seen the trip to Cuba by Jay-Z and the song that came out of that. Can you give me your take on why the United States is so interested in versing Venezuela, Cuba, and the other socialist countries in this hemisphere, and at the same time don't seem to take the same attitude towards China or Russia or any of the other socialist or communist countries? And I'll just listen in for the answer on that.
Thank you, Carla.
Well, I would say the first problem that South and Central America and Caribbean has is that it's closer to the U.S. than other countries. Although we see that in many situations, distance is not a barrier. The United States is probably the only country in the world that has over 400 military bases in different countries, in different people's countries. And, you know, the president of Ecuador made an amazing point when he said that, you know, the Mantris Air Force Base in Ecuador had to be closed. And the only way they would leave that base open is if the United States allowed Ecuador to put a military base in Miami. The whole concept of you controlling the world, you own the world has to do what you say. The world has to be accessible to you. The resources of the world is yours. Is a concept that has been driving the United States since its historical beginning. And based on this, countries that have became independent, truly independent, independent in the sense that, one, we are not taking the dictates of the United States. We are a country. We have our own interests. We have our own sovereignty. And we can work together and we can cooperate. But you can't dominate us. You can't make us do anything that we don't want to do. Is a concept that does not take lightly. It's a concept that the U.S. hates. And therefore, for countries to come into being saying that, the U.S. immediately feels that, you know, those countries shouldn't exist, that those leadership, the leadership in those countries shouldn't exist. And so, from as early as right after World War II, the United States began overthrowing independent leadership, and not even revolutionary or progressive independent leadership, just independent leadership. In Guatemala, you had a man named Abins. He came to power, and he said, you know, what the United Fruit Company is doing in my country is wrong. They can't enslave my people to work for them, pay them pittance, and then reap vast sums of wealth. And because he said this, he was overthrown in a coup d'etat. And that model of the coup d'etat have been used throughout South and Central America since 1950s, early 1950s. As a matter of fact, they have a whole saying that banana republics, which is what they call countries in South and Central America, has to know their place. And if they don't know their place, then they have to go. And that's what's been happening. So in 1958, when Cuba said, hey, this is our country, the leader that we had was a puppet who actually just control the country for the United States, and not just the United States, but the United States and the mafia. Ever since then, there has been an undeclared war on Cuba. And Cuba, in holding this position, have suffered immensely. Over 3,000 attempted assassinations on its leadership alone. From everything, from putting poison in diving suits to exploding cigars, there's a whole list. If you go and look at assassination attempts on Fidel Castro, there's a list of almost 1,500 that basically are traced back to the CIA. So you have these things, and then you have now other countries who are saying, well, you know, the majority of the people in our country is Indian and Africans. They should be the leadership. You have a man named Hugo Chavez who says, I'm Indian and African. And I think that since Venezuela's greatest wealth is the oil, it should go towards developing and benefiting the people in Venezuela. And that's what he did. And major oil companies in the U.S. have been tearing their hair out. They've been going crazy. They say, how could he do that? How could he think that benefiting the people of Venezuela is a good thing? You know, and you see that straight down the line in Bolivia. You have a little coffee farmer who is a trade unionist who became the president, the first indigenous Bolivian to rule their country since the 1400s. His position is clear, that Bolivia is for Bolivians. That in Bolivia, as Indians, we feel and respect the rights of Mother Earth. He says that Mother Earth has been mercilessly raped and is being killed. And it's being killed by capitalism. And that for Mother Earth to survive, capitalism must be destroyed. Are you there?
Yes, we are. Brother Shango, quickly, we got about 5 minutes left. Can we talk just a little bit about this question of Venezuela and the Bolivarian Revolution has taken a path to develop a different social path of development? They're on the path of a social path of development. A lot of time when one look at what's going on in that region, particularly in Venezuela, they use this concept, 21st century socialism. Just speak a little bit about what is that concept, what entails in terms of that concept, and how does it differ from the path that the U.S. trying to force them to go back on?
Well, it differs in the sense that, again, it's the people who are benefiting. Before Hugo Chavez, there was no attempt to equalize the wealth. And so, therefore, you had people who were extremely rich and people who were extremely poor. Since Hugo Chavez, a major dent has been made in that area. And now you have people who used to be extremely poor, who now have land, who have houses, who have homes, who are beginning to get some of the wealth of Venezuela. You have people who could not go to the doctors, people who would die from minor illnesses, are now themselves becoming doctors, and becoming doctors for free because of the training programs to improve the health situation and to create new doctors and new clinics and new hospitals in Venezuela. You have this, what they call endogenous feeling. You know, endogenous means it's coming from out of the people. It's coming from the people themselves. And these programs that, you know, Hugo Chavez has been blamed for, yes, he helped initiate, but many of them are programs where the people say, why can't we do this? Why can't we create this? Why can't we have this? And they look at how they can do it. In Venezuela, they got a thing called participatory democracy, which is a little different from what you got here, what you call democracy. Because participatory democracy means that you don't vote for somebody and they go in and supposedly work for you or work for themselves like they do here. Instead, you participate on every level in this democratic process. And the people from the block levels, from the community levels, are organized to help participate in this democracy. And if they elected somebody and don't feel that he's working for them, they can recall him. That's what the right wing used, because it's in the Constitution, to try to pull the 2005 coup against Hugo Chavez to recall elections, which he won hand down. He won by a majority. But it was in the Constitution, the new Constitution created by the people. So you have that. And then added to all of that, you do have Alba. You have Alba as an alternative to all these situations that the West has put you in. For example, if you want to do development in Venezuela, if you're a little farmer, if they give you land, because they have land redistribution, they have tons of land, and they're redistributing it to the farmers, say, okay, you've worked the land. These people have been absentee landlords. You don't even know who they are. You've never seen them. You just pay them, and they send the police to put you off the land if you don't. Okay, we're going to give you the land. But not only are they giving you the land, but they're giving you the tools to implement developing the land. They'll give you the tractor. They'll give you the seeds. They'll give you, you know, what you need to work the land, which is much different from most land development schemes where people are given land and just left to fend for themselves, and because they don't have no tools to develop the land, within 2, 3, or 4 years, they end up selling the land back to the original absentee owners anyway. In Venezuela, they're holding on to their land that they're getting. And then they have Alba as an alternative. Alba says, why should you have to go to the World Bank and the IMF to get a development loan that you end up paying the interest on for the rest of the country's history and never get to paying the primary loan itself? Why can't Alba loan you some money through the Bank of the South? And they created a Bank of the South to do that. Alba develops alternatives. It said, look, the only thing we ever see about South and Central America is what we see on CNN in Latin and Fox News Espanol. And, you know, this is not our interpretation of events and what's happening in the world. And we need to see that. So they created a regional television for South and Central America and the Caribbean that gives the perspective of the people in South and Central America and Caribbean. It's called Telesur. Telesur has now been broadcasting for almost 8 years. They have other programs that they've shared with people in South and Central America, and they've developed economic blocks between the countries of the South. And, you know, this is one of the problems with America's antagonism towards Venezuela. Venezuela.
Can we stop you, Brother Boshi? We run out of time, got about 2 minutes. Quickly, can you give us a summary and closing in terms of how can people be in solidarity with the people of Venezuela and their ongoing revolution? What can people
do? Okay, first of all, I think that the U.S. must recognize the government of Venezuela, the elected government of Venezuela, and that pressure should be put on the U.S. to recognize the government of Venezuela. I think there's a number of groups forming inside the United States who are basically working in solidarity with Venezuela, and that people, I will send you a list of these groups, Lee, and you can have them for anybody who wants them. They can call in and ask this station what groups exist and how can they work with them.
Okay.
I think, secondly, that folks have to ensure that NED and USAID gets out of the business of manipulating democracy. There's the, you know, people inside the United States who can determine whether these groups exist. It's your tax money that they're using. You have to say, no, we don't want our tax monies to go towards financing the overthrow of legitimate governments all over the world. So I'm saying that right now, one of the things you can do is demand that NED and USAID is eliminated and that money goes towards services that will benefit you.